Welcome to the I Am Podcast, enrichment for the ears of those who are always learning. Brought to you by the Avon-Maitland District School Board.
Internet safety for many, if not all of you listening to this podcast, is a relatively new term, but one that we as parents and educators need to be constantly aware of. We live in a digital age of connectivity where information is constantly flowing. An infinite amount of information, pictures, videos, and more is literally available at our fingertips. And while this technology has allowed for a new industry and a more globalized economy, it also harbors a darker side. In this episode, we will hear Ed Barty, Huron OPP Youth Officer, and Jeremy Brock, System Administrator for Avon-Maitland, talk about internet safety, privacy, and digital citizenship.
So for those that don't know me, I'm Ed. I'm the youth officer in Huron County. I've met a couple of you in the schools, so if you work in the schools, you'll recognize me. I'm certainly not a pro when it comes to technology or what to do. Jamie Stanley, if those of you that know him, he's more of an expert, but he couldn't be here tonight, so I'm going to fill in his shoes and just kind of give a couple of tips that we like to give advice to the students about and to parents that are want to be engaged, and we encourage them to be engaged because the internet and technology can certainly be a dangerous place as well as a very good place. That's where we want to be, but we want to make sure that people are safe in the process. So one thing that we're really pushing right now in the schools is something that we call Think. So anytime that you we tell our students that if they're posting anything online or if they're sending text messages, to use the word Think. And the Think is an acronym. And first it starts off with the T, which is it true? And then we have, is it hurtful? Is it illegal? Is it necessary? And is it kind? And those are the kind of the five things we like to make sure. And if any of those five aren't met, then we would be concerned that it could hit the point of it being an illegal act that somebody's doing. So simply posting an opinion online, you know, we have a freedom of speech, but you could cross a barrier of hitting kind of the police world or where we get involved for some sort of cyberbullying or things like that. The other things that as parents or as guardians of kids or teachers of kids, if you want to try and stay engaged, we want to encourage you, you to remind the kids not to share their passwords with anybody. If a password gets shared and then that other person does something, whether it be illegal or just offensive to somebody in some way, they very well could be the one that's held responsible because it's their account or their password that's going to be traced back to. So just encourage your kids or students not to use any kind of, not to share their passwords in any way. If your kids are on Facebook, which most kids are, they're starting at about 8 years old is the average now. Most kids, I think the average age for a cell phone is 9 years old now in Ontario, so it's pretty young. I know it's surprising. But so kind of what we tell parents is make sure to stay engaged with what your kids are doing on. We'll use Facebook as an example. And just kind of keep updated on their friends list. And when kids are that young, we try to tell parents to keep looking at their friends list. And if you don't recognize a person or you see a friend on there that you wouldn't welcome into your home, then they shouldn't be on the friends list. It's different when we're adults. We can make our own decisions. But at that age, if you don't know who that person is and you're not willing to welcome them into your home, then I would suggest that they shouldn't be on your child's Facebook or Instagram or Twitter feed or Snapchat or whichever it is that they're using. Another recommendation that we always say is to always have heightened privacy settings. I know a lot of children, they feel kind of invincible when it comes to this world, but the reality is most of our iPhones or smartphones are built in with GPS settings. So if you take a photo, maybe it's a little risky or it's a little bit out there, and you post it online, people that are really good with technology will be able to track and pinpoint exactly where that photo was taken. So they can take a copy of that photo and there's websites that they can input it to, and it'll tell them where it was taken. So if the person took it in their backyard, somebody could find out that it was taken and where it was taken. So we just like to remind people to keep that in mind when you're posting things that is taken from a something that has a GPS locator on it. It could be traced back to that location, so just ensuring that they're safe. Check browser histories of your kids if you can. I mean, we like to recommend that if they're going to start that young at 9, 10, 11, 12, that a parent maybe creates a contract with their child just to kind of say that the child agrees that while they're on Facebook, they'll do this, this, and this, and they won't do this, this, and this, and if they do, these are the consequences of what will happen. And then you as the parent signs it, and then the child signs it. That way there's no question about what they were and weren't allowed to do, and there's no surprise punishment at the end. They know what's going to happen if they break the rules. The other thing we recommend is keeping up to date with the lingo. So I know it's difficult, but if you can, certainly if you Google internet lingo, you'll be able to find if you see something maybe on your kid's phone or Facebook, you can Google it and easily find out. Some of the major ones are ASL, which is age, sex, and location. That's what people will use in chat rooms to find out who they are. Another one is CD9, which is code 9, which means my parents are in the room, or my parents are watching, or my parents are listening. And there's a few for parents' involvement too, so just keep that in mind if you see that happening. So obviously we always say stay clear of chat rooms. I know typically kind of the media has presented to us that pedophiles are 55-year-old fat men in their living room, but that's not the case. They can be 20-year-old Justin Bieber-looking people, which are more likely to be predators and get willing participants because they are good-looking young men. And, just try to keep the stereotypes out of our heads is kind of what we recommend, because they are starting a lot younger now, and they can easily be good-looking young men or women as well, but usually men. So just keep that in mind when they're doing that. Try to know who they're communicating with. If they're on Xbox and they use the headset and they're talking to people, if you hear them talking, just ask them who you're talking to. How do you know them? Why are you talking to that person? Try to be involved or as engaged as you can be. Another thing we like to suggest too is if your child comes to you and says, I have this, somebody sent me this naked picture, or somebody is bullying somebody, we try to recommend that we as parents don't punish your child, because we don't want them to not come to us if something, they didn't necessarily do anything wrong. Well, we want to make sure that they do come to us if they are being bullied, or if they see bullying, or if they see any kind of intimate image or sexual act online. And we want to make sure that they're going to say, well, my mom took my cell phone away from me last time I showed her, so I'm not showing her this time. All right, we want to make sure that doesn't happen, because we want to try and stop this. Try to keep up to date with the new apps as well. That's the recommendation, just kind of on what they do. So a big one out there right now is called Calculator. And it looks, if any of you have an iPhone, when you look at your iPhone, it has a calculator built into it, and it looks exactly the same and works exactly the same. But when you push in a certain sequence, it opens up, and it's hidden videos and photos that they can put in. It's like a vault, a photo vault, essentially. So there's all kinds of apps out there just to kind of keep in mind, to try to stay up to date on. So you can say, okay, why do they have two calculators on their phone? So one is probably a secret app. Okay, so just they're getting sneaky. So another big thing in the chat rooms is why we try to stay away from them is there's these people called cappers or capers. And what they do is they kind of infiltrate your computer system and will they'll copy any intimate image or sexual act that goes on through, say, two people. That's the day and age we're in, and that's what people are doing. So What they do is they secretly record it or secretly snap pictures of it, and then they use those pictures to extort the person from either more sexual images or more sexual videos or for money. So we really try to educate, obviously, that you don't want to do this stuff on video, on camera, and because the person that you're doing it with you may trust, but people can easily access any iPhone or any computer camera remotely from any location. So the other thing we like to tell our students, and we can tell our children, is if you're not willing to say it to somebody's face, don't say it via text message. For some reason, we've got very out of control with saying things via text message that we would never in a million years think of saying to somebody's face. So what we try to tell students or kids is that read whatever you're going to say out loud first. Because when you read it out loud, usually it sounds pretty silly or foolish. And we try to recommend that they maybe take a few minutes to think about what they're about to do. And that takes us back to that THINK acronym. Right? Is it kind? Is it hurtful? Is it illegal? So the new laws that came out this year for intimate images and child pornography are that, so I'll give you a kind of an example of what happened in our school this year. It was a grade 7 student took some intimate video of herself and sent it to a grade 8 student. The grade 7 female student is a good girl, made a very poor decision. And ultimately that video is out there now. And several people saw it. We think we caught it before it got distributed too far, but there's no way of knowing. One thing we always look at is we have to seize those devices. So child pornography or intimate images can never be erased from any device permanently that we're satisfied to our satisfaction, essentially. So if a school-issued iPad, we've had to seize several of them, and then we destroy them because we can't confirm 100% that that intimate image or video would be destroyed. So, you know, we really try to educate them because, you know, a good female student, it could be a good male student as well, sending those images or those videos can get you into a lot of trouble because she's, you know, producing child pornography. She's possessing it, and now she's distributing it. And then it goes to him, and he's distributing it and sharing it with his friends. You know, typically we don't think of, you know, a 13-year-old and a 13-year-old as child pornography. But in the criminal justice system, it is. So we like to try to educate them to stay away from those topics. And then ultimately, we just like to remind people that these things will impact the rest of your life. So once something is out there, it's never gone. We had a student that wrote on Facebook that he was going to go and shoot up a school. And that went viral in about 12 minutes. About 13 police officers and a school on lockdown, all within about 10 minutes or 12 minutes. So ultimately he was arrested and said he was joking. But ultimately there was a lot of people that didn't know if he was joking. So he's arrested and charged and has to go through a process now. And that's going to follow him forever. When he goes to do college applications, now when you fill out a college and university application, you have to put your email address, your Facebook account, your Twitter account, and they'll check that, and it'll follow you forever. So there was a girl that got into the Ivy Business School in London by Western there, and she got a full scholarship, and she tweeted out something to the effect of this Ivy Business app is a joke or something like that, and they pulled her scholarships. So... social media, you get no privacy. Students that say they think they have privacy because it's their Facebook page, there's no such thing on the internet. You don't get privacy, so we just like to remind them of those.
So the Next Generation Learning work that we're doing is an extension of some of the work we've been doing to provide opportunities for students to try to work towards some of the key items in our strategic plan, looking at maximizing student outcomes, creating positive, inclusive learning environments, and making sure that all students have the opportunities that we would love for them to have. The purpose of our session tonight, then, is to, and I'll walk you through fairly quickly some of these items here. The purpose is to provide an overview of the current supports for students. So I'll give you a quick snapshot of the kinds of things that we are providing for students when we provide them with devices. To share the rationale for digital citizenship procedure, so something we're looking at developing for the system. Understand the difference between acceptable use and responsible use, and we'll see that a little bit as we go. Outline the foundational elements of a digital citizenship procedure program and provide an opportunity for community consultation and feedback. So the intention tonight is to share a bit of information with you about the kinds of things we have in place to support students as they're, when they have their devices, the kinds of information we're providing them with, the kinds of things that are available to teachers and students on a regular basis, and look at why we need to develop this digital citizenship procedure, and then hopefully get some information or some feedback from you and see, you know, what kinds of questions you have, what kinds of things you'd like to see involved or connected to this work as we go forward. So a little of the backstory to start with the Next Generation Learning Project. In January 2014, we rolled out iPads to students in the Mitchell and Clinton sort of school areas. And over the next couple of years, all grade 7 and 8 students have been issued devices, and now all grade 9 students in our system have devices, as well as some grade 10. So there's quite a number of iPads out there that students are using for learning to support the work that they're doing in classrooms. In addition to this, then all teachers, DECEs, EAs, and other staff groups have been issued iPads as well to help support that learning. So there are a tremendous number of devices in our system, but there are a number of supports in place. So some of that is staff training, but also the deployment training, so the information that students get when these devices are being rolled out. I'm going to show you, just share a little bit of that with you here in a moment, if my clicker works. So one of the ways that we support teachers and students is by, we have a number of tech coaches in our system. So one of the groups that I supervise are the elementary technology coaches. So those folks, there's a coordinator that's been hired, as well as a number of teacher technology coaches who are expert teachers, as well as people who have a tremendous background with technology. So these folks are working in schools all the time to support teachers and students. And one of the things that they do, the technology coaches, as well as especially the coordinator, when devices are given to students, there's a script of items that are shared with students, so there's a consistent message that goes to everyone across the system. And one of the things that we do is really emphasize the learning components of this, but also some of the key safety components and why it's important that students are safe and why they use these in acceptable ways. So this is I pulled a few of the items from this slide deck that our Next Generation Learning Coordinator, Rick Saunders, uses and has used with students across the system. So when we identify the purposes for the device, when we're giving students iPads, the primary use is for education. It's owned by the board, and that's made very clear, so that this isn't a private device. It's intended to be personalized, but it's not owned by the student. Personal use, I guess, it follows the board's computer use agreement, and it's theirs until they leave. We talk about security, and I know Ed mentioned a few things, and there'll be a few commonalities in that you'll see in some of the work that we, especially the work that goes into identifying the kinds of things that students are responsible for when they get these devices. So they keep them secure at all times, report the loss or theft. It's registered to each student, and no loaning, and I know Ed mentioned that about not sharing passwords, not loaning devices, because kids would be responsible for things that happen on those devices. So we work through this with students as we go. There's a device management system. And one of the things that's there too is parents and teachers need the codes. One of the things that's been really important in some of the work that we've done is to make sure that students know and that parents know, and hopefully school, like teachers and administrators know, that it's everyone's responsibility to make sure that the content that's on there is supporting learning. It's not intended to be something there's no hidden content. You can't not share your passcode. People have to have access to that, and parents should be absolutely have the right to ask their student, to ask their son or daughter that, what is your passcode? I need to know, and I'd like to keep an eye on this, because I know in the past, when I was working in an elementary school as a vice principal, we would actually collect devices from time to time and do a quick scan of the items that were on those to make sure that there was nothing inappropriate, nothing that was problematic or, you know, anything that was going to get students into trouble or that was interfering with the learning that was happening. We have a code of conduct for our for computer use for our students that's been shared with them, and this is just kind of referring to that, that they're expected to use and access the internet and networks responsibly, and that there are four big responsibilities: to take good care of the device, to bring it to school every day, to charge it at night, and this idea of appropriate usage. So appropriate usage then is outlined for students, and we give kids a very clear understanding of what is appropriate in our context. So looking at a variety of different kinds of things. One of the key things that students often push back against is the fact that they don't have enough space. They always say, well, we don't have enough space on these iPads. Well, the problem often is that these devices are full of pictures and images, like other kinds of images, and it's not very often that there are inappropriate ones. There's pictures of your dog, or pictures of my schoolwork, or videos, or things that we've, you know, things we're sharing, those kinds of things. But the expectation is at the outset of all of this is that those non-instructional images could potentially be wiped every day, and certainly there needs to be space on there open for school content. We talk about the kinds of things that are available to students and what the potential consequences for those kinds of things are. And one of the reasons why we are working to develop this procedure is so that there's a consistent sort of expectation across all schools. This sample consequences, when we talk about this, this is something that we've talked about as administrators, and it falls sort of under your own set of like personal beliefs about technology and your knowledge about this. So we wanted to try to develop something that was reflective of something that can be used system-wide. We shared this with students at the beginning of the school year. It's the digital citizenship chart, I guess. And it had some information about the kinds of things you should be doing, the kinds of things you shouldn't be doing. And as we started to have a conversation about what this might look like in our system, we said, we want to focus on the positive. So we want to look at the things that are on the do side and really emphasize those with students rather than some of the things that are on the don't side. Because some of the research we looked at says that if we emphasize the negatives, don't do this and you shouldn't be doing this and you can't access this or this will happen, and we outline those in negative kind of terms, there tends to be less of a buy-in on this kind of thing. So when we frame it in a more positive way, students tend to be more connected to what we're doing. So things like do be yourself and share your thoughts, report inappropriate things, give others credit, stand up against bullying. And there's a few things too, other things that Ed connected with, things like remember that people may not be who they seem, use caution when talking to people you know, those kinds of things. So making sure that we've got some foundational pieces there. This itself doesn't really support students and support learning and support teachers and support parents in our system. These are good reminders, but we want to develop something eventually that is a fairly comprehensive kind of thing that helps students from kindergarten to grade 12 know what their expectations are online, know how to manage themselves appropriately, and make sure that they're making really good choices so that, as Ed said, when these things follow you around the rest of your life, what you're left with, the legacy you leave, your digital footprint is a really positive one and can actually be really beneficial down the road. Because one of the conversations we had with a teacher group earlier this week, they talked about ways that they're using positive digital, developing a positive digital footprint, talking about the kinds of social media that they're using in their classrooms and how this can actually be used to help you down the road rather than, you know, being something scary. So there's lots of really great ways to use some of these tools, and it's a matter of recognizing what the tool is, how it can be used, and why we need to go at it in a certain way and why we need to be careful. This is something else that's in the information. Teacher directed is okay. Ask permission, not forgiveness. I mean, we often go in different places where we say, oh, it's okay, just ask forgiveness later. In this case, this is the message that students are given. Don't assume anything. And often when students are using devices or we hear about situations in schools, it's because they've been actually just making assumptions about what's okay in that situation. Daily use, this is the kinds of things that students will be expected to use, and when the information is given to them, there's lots of different ways that they're using these in classroom settings. And so all kinds of different apps, lots of different opportunities to record and share their learning with their teachers, with their peers, get feedback from others, get feedback from their teacher, share this and collaborate in other ways with people locally and across the globe. So there's lots of different opportunities that are available with these devices. So with regards to other supports we have in our system for students, we have administrative procedures. We started with a bring your own device procedure that still exists and still is impact it impacts students in grade 11 and 12, especially students who do not have their own devices at this point. Also, admin procedure 140, which is an acceptable use of computers. And in that, there's a code of conduct for students. So once again, when we talk about code of conduct, we look at acceptable use versus responsible use. And it's something that potentially down the road, it may be, you know, there may be a possibility of adjusting this a little bit to reflect some of the language that we want to try to use to promote positive things in schools. One of the curricular supports in classrooms. So just the purpose, I guess, just in the event that it's not clear, is to try to show you that there are a lot of things that we have in place currently that are supporting students in the work that we're doing with these devices and with technology in general. But there certainly are areas that we need to continue to work at this. The revised health and phys ed curriculum that came out in 2010 under considerable scrutiny, was re-released in 2015 with some changes and now is in a full implementation this year. And one of the key areas of that is looking at personal safety and injury prevention. And within this, there's a lot of mention of on and offline safety considerations. So one of the things that's happened is there are lots of different cross-curricular integrated learning opportunities where people can blend this learning across different curriculum areas. So this isn't just a health thing. This is something that can be embedded in science. It can be embedded in English and math and all those different areas. The Ontario Principals Council actually created a video that has a really good overview of the health and curriculum document, or sorry, health and phys ed curriculum. But one of the key areas that they outline is the changes from the mid 1990s when the first document was released, and the changes that have happened ever since for students. And it's actually in a student voice. So I'll share just this little snip with you here, and hopefully it works. And let me try this again.
Okay. A lot has changed since 1998, the last time the health and physical education curriculum was fully updated. There's a lot of cool technology that helps us communicate and interact in different ways than in the past. We now have almost immediate access to so much information, and we're constantly connected through our phones, social media, and online. We can learn from, communicate, and work with people from around the world. But kids also face a lot of challenges in today's fast-paced and connected world. Learning how to stay safe online, learning about healthy relationships, healthy eating, being physically active, as well as mentally well.
So these are some of the key components of the new health and phys ed curriculum document, but I just wanted to outline the ideas that they are recognizing the changes in the landscape, I guess, and you know, recognizing that there is a considerable need to help support students as we move forward in this new area. So if all this exists, why do we need to consult on a new procedure? I'll give you a second to read that. It's something that was really interesting and really resonated with teachers when we showed them this the other day. Our kids are growing up in a digital playground and no one is on recess duty. So the concern is that when we see some of these images, a lot of the folks that we met with and we've had a conversation with lately knew some of them but didn't know all of them. These are the kinds of things that students are using. And in fact, this graphic is probably dated already, considering that some of the graphics that are on this image, there are things like Snapchat and Twitter and Vine and Instagram that students are using regularly, but I don't know a lot of grade 7 or 8 students who are using their LinkedIn profile to the best of its, you know, ability and stretching the legs in that kind of area. YouTube in the far corner, Flickr, there's a variety of different ones. This one here is Snapchat, the yellow one up there. That's one of particular concern for sure with people because if you're not familiar with it, basically when students or anyone takes a photo with Snapchat, it will disappear in 10 seconds. Of course, we know that people screen capture things and it sends you a message to say that someone has screen captured your Snap image. But by then it's too late, and we go into this sort of same kind of conversation that Ed had identified earlier, where we just have to work on having students use this in responsible ways. And it's one of the reasons why we want to make sure that as we develop some of this, as we develop some policy and look at some of these procedures that we can implement in our system, they are reflective and you know, they're considering some of these kinds of realities. So rationale, one of the things that we looked at when we started to develop the rationale for this was Alec Curls, who's a researcher from Western Canada, spoke to the principals group in February in Niagara Falls when we met, and he was very he was great. He shared a message about his messages tend to be about branding your school, branding your district, working through trying to develop a really positive digital footprint and the kind of impact that can have. But he was one of the lead researchers on a digital citizenship document from Saskatchewan that was intended to help schools, districts, regions, whatever, develop their own digital citizenship policy. And a lot of the research in this talks about integrating and making sure that this does blend into all of those different curriculum areas that we're looking at. So one of the things I mentioned earlier about the health and phys ed curriculum, it actually is intended to be embedded in a variety of other ways. And the research would say that that's one of the most important ways to make sure that this thing actually does become a living, breathing part of the culture of your system. The world's changing and schools need to adapt and technology has fundamentally changed our idea of a community. So recognizing some of these things that have changed over the last, say, 20 or 30 years. And when we talk about school, there's all kinds of conversations about how different school is now. And school doesn't have to be that different, but in some ways it does have to be different because it does have to be reflective of the kinds of things that are realities in our world. And one of the things they talk about is how shrunken the world has become, how really interconnected people are. And so it's recognizing that our idea of community is different now too, because we recognize that, yes, this is a community of people that are here, this town is a community, our region is a community, but people also feel really connected in online communities and areas that don't actually have a physical space. So there's things that we need to consider about the way that we've changed and the way that things have kind of adapted. Barriers of space and time have changed and things are more fluid and complex. And it says here that we need to ensure that students are equipped with the skills to safely and smartly sift through an abundance of information that's available to them. So all these things are sort of the foundational purposes or principles why we need to consider a really comprehensive digital citizenship plan and figure out how we're going to get this to students, how we're going to help support teachers, and then how we can support people in our community and what kinds of things we need to do and how they can connect to this work. Let's see. So I think one of the other things that I heard Ed say earlier was about how this work, when we talk about people not saying things online that they would say that they wouldn't say to someone's face. And when we talked about this with a few different groups that we've talked to already, it kept coming up that we don't want to necessarily teach just digital citizenship. We don't want to emphasize digital citizenship only. We want to emphasize citizenship within the digital context. The idea being that we have students who sometimes aren't very nice to each other in face-to-face situations or aren't very respectful of people in their own community, let alone online communities and those kinds of things. So we want to consider that we want people to be prepared, like living and breathing and working in these online and offline environments, but be respectful in all of them and be safe in all of them and make sure that those. So the emphasis emphasis for us, I don't think, is just purely digital. We want to make sure that there's an emphasis on just creating a better, more sort of well-rounded student, people who are equally respectful and safe in on and offline environments. So we looked at the idea of citizenship in a digital world rather than separating out the different spheres. So in this idea of citizenship in a digital world, there's a few key issues. One of them is balance, and that was brought to us, I know, when we spoke to the trustees back in October, I believe, there was some concern about balance and the idea that students may or may not have too much screen time and the concern that having the device at their disposal may create an increased opportunity for this. So recognizing the need for balance, recognizing the idea of safety and security, of course, concerns about cyberbullying, and then other ethical issues like copyright and plagiarism. So we need to consider all of those things as we start to develop this and make sure that this not only recognizes safety, but potentially mental health concerns, all of those things that we have to, keep in mind. All the things that are that are part of our job, part of our responsibility as teachers, but also as parents and educators and just people in our broader community. So as we work through this, a couple of the key things that were identified in this document, which I found really interesting, and we had some conversation about this as we started to build this. One of them is that students are often in online spaces. This is no surprise. And they need to know how to be there safely and appropriately. So I think that's it follows in the same message. I mean, our message, you know, and the police message is essentially the same. We want people to be safe, and we want them to do so appropriately. So it's important to do that. But one of the really important things, or one of the kind of interesting things, is there's a general belief that students know way more than they actually do. Right? We believe that we call these students, or this generation of kids, digital natives, because, for example, my son, who was born in 2006, has never known a world without an iPad. But does he know how to use it? Does he know how to apply those critical thinking skills? Does he know how to give himself boundaries? Was he able to do that without any kind of support? And the answer is absolutely not. but which is the root of some of the conflict at our house. But clearly, it's about trying to support these critical thinking and awareness skills, not just from, you know, not just for younger students, but also for older students as well. We want to promote lifelong learning, and we say that we want to create lifelong learners, but the idea with this is a lot of learning is taking place not just after the schooling years, but during the school years outside of the school. So kids are invested in learning about and connecting with communities that are outside of their actual, you know, four-walled school, which is great. And there's lots of amazing things that are happening, lots of things that are learning. We think about YouTube, and I mean, I'm sure probably everyone here has a story about something they've learned on YouTube. When they, you know, whether it's replacing the light in your, you know, in your vehicle, or you know how to get something unstuck from your dishwasher. I don't know, but there's all kinds of things that happen, right? But we learn, and we constantly are learning this, and so we model that sometimes. We want to make sure that when students are doing this, they understand how to do that appropriately and safely as well. And finally, preparing students with the digital skills and competencies to help them be successful in a rapidly changing world economy. There's all kinds of conversations we've had about what the world might look like and how things are being automated and mechanized. And we need to create students who are adaptable and innovative. And we want to have students and people who go into the world with the skills that they need to be able to succeed and thrive. So in developing this, it's a really complex procedure. It's not just about writing a procedure or a policy. It's about having to try to connect with people. So connecting with teachers, and we've done that this week. I've been out to a number of schools to talk to some of our secondary teachers with their experiences there. We had a large consultation on Monday with teachers here about the kinds of things they're concerned about, the kinds of things that they're doing to help support this, but also the kinds of things they think they need and they think students need. So the idea with this is we're trying to meet a variety of different groups, and tonight's, I guess, mission is to try to connect with parents as well, or community members. And these policies or procedures have to be reflective of the standards and expectations of our community. So for us to write a policy or us to write a procedure that we're going to use across our entire system, it's not really fair to say these are the rules, and we've decided these are going to be the rules, because most people won't find themselves in that. We look at it through our different lenses. We may have a certain bias that leads us in a certain direction, and maybe people can't connect to that. So we want to make sure that there are opportunities for lots of different stakeholders to have a voice in this process. And then what the intention of this is to take all the information we gather and look at some of the resources that exist. So some of the things that are already in place in other school boards, online, as far as different ministry-sponsored or ministry-funded areas, and take a look at the kinds of things that are there and adapt them so that they meet our local needs. And that's an important part of what we're looking at going forward. There's no point in us reinventing the wheel. We don't need to do that at this point. We do have a responsibility, though, to take a look and make sure that our students are safe, that they do understand these things, that we are providing them with opportunities, as well as teachers and as well as community members, to try and learn a little bit more about this and feel, you know, satisfied by what we're doing here. I talked before about acceptable versus responsible use. And there's a graphic here that identifies what an acceptable use policy looks like. and what a responsible use policy looks like. And so our intention is to try to draft what we come up with in a more positive way. So it looks more like a responsible use rather than acceptable use. So these are acceptable use tends to be about the things you shouldn't do. Talks about rules, it's often restrictive, operates on assumptions that students will lose privileges if they don't follow the rules. Where a responsible use policy is more about the kinds of things that students should be doing. And it talks about increased responsibility. And one of the key things about this is the development of this in a co-constructed or a common way where people are working together to develop this so that there is ownership by everyone in this whole situation. So, I mean, we can create a set of rules that we would like to see happen or would like to see sort of enforced in schools, and people can just make a list of rules and put it on the wall. And we all know how well that works. It works well in some cases and really poorly in other cases. But I know from my own experience and also from my experience and the experience from many other researchers, people who have done lots of work in this area, not to say that mine's based in research, but it's based in experience. The more investment you have in the kind of work that you're doing in developing these, the better off, the more invested people are. I know in developing criteria in a classroom, students, when you can kind of guide them towards your desired outcome, they still feel like they're invested in that process, and they feel like they've created these norms, and these are their rules, and they're more willing to live by that than they are if you impose them on them, especially in our elementary and secondary schools. So it's one of the most important parts of this responsible use is outlining some key ideas of what we want, but then allowing people the flexibility to interpret those within their own space and try to build that and build it through their community. So how is it being promoted across the province? I found this graphic here, and it looks like, it's been identified in sort of a path. And the idea with this, and what I like about this, is it actually identifies a few different areas as far as grade levels and different groupings. And so there tends to be an emphasis on certain types of skills. And these skills are not necessarily separate from one another, but they're intended to be foundational skills that then build upon other things and keep building and keep building. With an awareness that as students get older, they are more able to to handle some of these more complex expectations. Things like in primary, looking at logins and passwords and basic navigation, we don't need to scare kindergarten students with the concerns about sexting and those kinds of things. I do know from my experience with teaching kindergarten students last year that logins and passwords can be pretty challenging. So that's we don't want to get too carried away with some of these kinds of things. But as we get into the junior grades, it is important to remind kids about secure passwords because they're doing a lot of sharing. They're concerned about trying to fit in. And when we look at cyberbullying, I know my experiences would say that grade 5, grade 6, grade 7 are the times when it's probably the most challenging because students are starting to try to find themselves with others and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And so they're maybe a little less careful with the kinds of things they'll say. So those types of things we want to be really careful about. When we get into intermediate, I know we mentioned again, Ed mentioned it before, about the digital footprint. And they talk this idea of the grandma in the room. They say, there's a poster that I've seen a few places that it says, would you say that if your grandma were standing right beside you? Or would you send that to your grandma? Or would you share that picture with your grandma? And there's maybe some pretty progressive grandmas out there, but I don't imagine, in lots of cases, I would imagine that kids would probably rethink some of those things. As it gets into secondary, it talks about, is it going to impede your ability to get a job? Or, how are you effectively using the internet? So is it if we're talking research or those kinds of things, are we looking at that? And then the law and what kinds of things could be problematic with that. And then finally, we look at technology in the workplace and at home. And making sure that our usage outside of work and during work time is appropriate and is representing us and we're making good choices in ways that, that don't get us into trouble. So when we look at foundations for a policy, the kinds of things that all the research that we've consulted has recognized, these three things are kind of the most important things: education, protection, and respect. So if we look at these three items, these are probably the most important things in any kind of digital citizenship procedure, any kind of education or training about this in this area. We want to look at these three things. When we talk about education, we're looking at digital communication, we're looking at digital literacy and digital commerce, teaching kids how to work through these kinds of things effectively and safely. exchanging information, buying and selling goods, shopping online. It happens, you know, all the time. And learning about technology, how to search and find things effectively. When we talk about protection, we want to make sure that people are protected when they're online. So looking at their rights and responsibilities, digital safety and security, and then digital health and wellness. So looking at well-being, physical and psychological, in this technology world. And then respect is looking at a variety of different kinds of things. So digital etiquette, digital access, and digital law. So making sure that students are responsible for all of these things as they work through and understanding that these are all key parts of a sort of a broadly based, safe, appropriate experience online as you're working through these things. So where do we go from here? We have all of these supports that we have in place for students, which we try to support them with. We have these planning guides, we have administrative procedures, we have some guides that are, this is OSIPAC, which is a computer, OSIPAC is a ministry-funded body that actually does a lot of vetting of resources and online sources and used to do a lot of work with software. And they've actually created a resource that I really, really liked, and it actually is a citizenship resource from K to 12. So it's one of the kinds of things that once we do some consultations, we may actually start to look at some of these kinds of things and see how we can embed this in some of our work. So just share this with you quickly. One of the things that I've done too is we're going to share the slide deck later. So we'll share it out, and people will be able to, if you wanted to connect with some of this, these links will be live on the slide deck, or you can copy them and go out to those sections. But one of the kind of cool things about OSIPAC is it has four key areas. And so we talked about our three key areas, but you'll see those all embedded throughout this. So they look at critical thinking and information literacy, some of the things that critical thinking is one of our student outcomes. Creation and credit, so we talk creativity, which also fits with our outcomes. Health and protection, presence and communication. Communication is also one of the outcomes. So there's a number of ways that this fits nicely with our current strategic plan, the kinds of things we're trying to promote in our system. What I really like about it, though, is I like that it has actually a number of resources in a variety of different areas that help support students throughout all of these different areas, all four of those areas, but across all the different grade levels. So it's the kind of thing that exists now. I'm not going into a ton of detail about it, but it's the kind of thing that exists that we can actually use to help support our work as we move forward. So that gets us to the end, and I apologize. I know that this has been a bit of me leading you along the journey, and we have certainly lots of opportunity for questions and those kinds of things. But this is the part where I'm going to ask you to provide us with some feedback. So one of the things that I'd love to hear from you are, what are some things you'd like to learn more about? Also, too, what are some things you think are important for students to be learning with regards to digital citizenship? And what are some suggestions just generally about our Next Generation Learning Initiative, the impact on students, staff, and community? So I've provided you a couple of different ways to access this. And the post-it notes and markers are there in the event that you want to add some of these thoughts, some thinking to this. And what we're going to do is collaborate or just pull all this stuff together and actually add it to the pile of information that we've got that we've been collecting over the last few weeks from teachers. Our intention is to connect with students in a couple of weeks at a student voice forum and talk to them about the same kinds of issues and gather some of their input about the kinds of things they'd like to see and how they'd like to see themselves represented. But it's your opportunity listen to my spiel, I guess, to give us some feedback about the kinds of things that you think are really important here. One of the reasons this thing keeps flipping off this side smart board, but what I've created, if you take a look at the top corner there, and I put it on your table as well, for those of you who might not be familiar with, these are QR codes. You'll start to see these in a lot of different places. And these QR codes, if you happen to have a QR scanner on your smartphone or iPad or other device, if you were to take an image of this using one of the scanners, not just your camera, but the actual app itself, it will actually take you to this web space here. This is called a Padlet. And this is essentially an opportunity where you would be able to just click on this and type in some things if you were to follow this link. So the link is available through the QR code. It's also available online through this web address. If you wanted to follow the web address, you could do that. Or if you happen to access the slide deck later, you'd be able to click on that link and do it. We can also go old school and just put it on sticky notes, and we'll, if you have things that are related to the NGL work, we can put it on that one. If you have questions about our internet safety, digital citizenship, we're happy to post them back there. And the other one here, I believe, is the what kinds of things you think students need to be learning about within our digital citizenship work. So, I mean, you're more than welcome to do that now. You're welcome to certainly we'll open it up to conversation or any kind of questions that you have. The last part of this too, and I'll put the other slide back up, but when we post this slide deck, there is information here that you can gather more about the kinds of things that are happening. So our technology coaches and our coordinator have actually a really robust blog that they use all the time. So they're posting things constantly, the kinds of things that students are doing in classrooms, examples of things that are happening in classrooms. So if you're interested about the ways that students are using devices in our schools, or in particular maybe your kids, they may be able to find some information there. Our board website is listed here as well. And then I've left my email address, and I've actually included Ed's as well. So if you have specific questions, anything related to the sort of school end of this, I'm more than happy to connect with you or answer any questions. And anything sort of with a policing angle, Ed has been gracious enough to allow us to use his contact information to be able to send them that way.